This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Lots of nonsense from Wednesday, November the 11th. Amongst the nonsense, we've taken a very serious look at the business of farming. Speaking to the Abu Dhabi Investment Office, which has written a cheque for 150-odd million dirhams, and one of the recipients of it, the Pure Harvest Smart Farms, the tomato people. We've also been looking at whether or not the Pfizer vaccine could be the silver bullet for the airline industry, speaking to IATA and others. Having a look at what's happening with TikTok and the US, Apple's latest launch as well, the new MacBooks, are they worth it? And Serena has got all your COVID news.
Ask Serena.
With Fragoman, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
Morning, Serena. Morning. Fresh off the back of another press conference.
Yes, indeed.
Was it a goodie?
It was, we had statistics and some, repeating messaging. I think it was a good one.
Season three, living up to expectations.
Waiting for the finale, yeah.
Which characters will make it through to the next event? Right, where are we with the numbers?
Okay, so this time last week, we were looking at 1,008 new cases of COVID-19 after more than 96,900 tests were conducted across the UAE. Yesterday, new figures, 1,096 new cases. That's after more than 135,800 tests were conducted across the country. So currently, total confirmed cases, 144,385. That includes 4,166 active cases, as in those being treated. So we're up from the 3,815 yesterday. Three fatalities, so we're at 518 there. 742 recoveries. It's been, over the last few days, in the 600s, 742, so that's a positive that it's gone up a bit. But 139,701 total recoveries. Just looking internationally, when it comes to cases in the last 24 hours, the US reported more than 135,000, India more than 44,000, Brazil more than 25,000, Italy more than 35,000, France more than 22,000, Pakistan more than 1,600. This is all in the space of 24 hours. I do have a bit more of an in-depth international roundup there.
Right. Well, let's look locally because there's quite a lot going on. We have a bit of local news, one of which has made our business headlines because Etihad is having a little bit of a pivot. And we've seen airlines around the world doing this. We've seen Singapore serving people meals on the ground. We've seen Qantas selling off its pajamas and its beverage trolleys. Etihad, nothing quite so drastic, but it is going into the booming mask business.
Yep. It's definitely branching out. So the airline will produce 1.3 million face masks over the next 3 months at its newly opened facility. So they can offer protective gear, not just for their staff, but also healthcare workers as well. So in a statement sent to ARN News, Etihad Airways said the masks will be three-layered, provide up to 98% filtration. So the new facility, run by Etihad Engineering, will operate fully automated machines that produce up to 20,000 masks daily. So, and they've also said that they could also mass produce for third-party consumers, partners and suppliers, which would be a great move forward considering that there is such a demand right now and a lot of countries are suffering with regards to the need for PPE equipment.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, it's proper medical masks, isn't it? If you are working for Etihad, no one's putting on a little fashion mask thinking, oh, I'll wear the checks today.
You can actually see how they're making them because we do have the video up on the ARN News Centre Instagram. It's quite cool. And the ending, see if you can spot something on the mask right at the end. I was quite impressed.
Spot something?
Yes, you have to go to the ARN News Centre Instagram to look at it.
Like a virus?
No, nothing like that. It's pretty cool.
Right, we've got some figures out from the KHDA as well.
So when it comes to education, it's around 53% of all private school students in Dubai have returned to face-to-face learning. They're back in the classroom. So the rest, 47%, are continuing with full-time distance education. So it's just kind of sending the message of, you know, the people's confidence and being comfortable and returning to the classroom. So it's according to data from the KHDA. The authority said definitely continuing to carry out surprise inspections in schools because they want to make sure everyone is following those very important COVID-19 safety, health and safety guidelines. And more than 1,000 field visits were conducted in September and October.
Speaking of health and safety guidelines, National Day this year. How are we going to pull that off?
So this year's 49th UAE National Day, taking into account public safety with COVID-19, officials are taking a different approach. There will be a live show broadcast on TV. So December 2nd, the event will be staged in Abu Dhabi without a public audience. So online platforms will also stream the event live. Organisers have said all precautionary measures will be carried out to ensure the safety of the cast and crew involved in the show. But yeah, basically, the star attraction, so to speak, is going to be a moving sculpture with digital visuals projected on it. But it will be quite spectacular, but they want people to not have crowds and gathering, just staying safe and maybe just watching it from the comfort of your own home.
Will I not be driving slowly up and down Beach Road?
No, you will not.
Just checking. Right, what else is going on? New research, actually. Local research with some interesting results.
Yes, researchers at New York University Abu Dhabi are working on developing a COVID-19 testing method that could prove to be at least 100 times more sensitive than the gold standard commonly used around the world today. So this research not only could significantly improve testing methods, could detect people with the early stages of the virus, but also asymptomatic cases as well. So and also reduce the false negative rate of clinical diagnostic tests. So that is where a test result, which wrongly indicates that a particular condition or attribute is absent. So that's the false negative. So this would be such a massive achievement when it comes to trying to get the virus under control, because you're trying to reduce transmission and help with early detection programs. So it's a three-step approach, not just cost effective, but it could improve testing accuracy to the saliva or nasal swab testing. Been trying to break down the scientific formula for you. They say it's working with both synthetic viral RNA and clinical samples. What we do know is it is based on nasal and saliva swab samples. The fluid that is used in testing is so sensitive that it can pick up what it needs to. So their findings have been reported in the journal Processes. So that means it is one step closer to being recognised.
Do you know what I have noticed in the last couple of days, conversations with people, is that people are starting to get preferences for the way they do their tests. People who might be travelling quite a lot, crossing the border quite a lot, going to meetings with important officials that they need to have a health clearance as well as any other kind of clearance. And I just find that I'm having increasing conversations with people who are a bit like, oh, I use X hospital because you can be in and out in 8 minutes. Mm. There's never a queue. It costs 100 dirhams more, but I know that I'm, you know, not going to be waiting. Other people who are like, well, I do the drive-through, but I never do the drive-through from the side. There's no sideways entry. Always front-on entry. Easier on the nostrils. People are getting testing habits, testing preferences.
Well, I did it last night with my wife because she had a meeting this week and she demanded one. And yeah, so
A test.
There was a discussion at the drive-through. Sounds like a line from Greece. And the conclusion was, no, you can't get out of the car, but the best thing is to recline the seat.
Did she not want sideways? Did she want front?
Well, she wanted to get out. But no, they said your only option is seat upright or seat reclined. So she kind of did dentist chair, seat reclined style.
Tom, you've probably been tested more than any other individual in this studio. Have you got your own testing habits?
No. They've sort of changed because it used to be sort of they came to us to a certain degree. Now it's I'm going to them on a weekly basis. I've got another one tomorrow morning, crack of dawn. I'm just doing them earlier these days to get them out of the way.
Question. On the way to work.
Yeah, literally.
Anyone?
Yeah, so mine's at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Out of the room, everybody that's had who's had the nasal PCR test, have you encountered one where you've had a really nice smell put on the end of the swab?
Eh?
Because I was watching my friend's Insta stories the other day and she said she went and had the nasal swab PCR test and the nurse or a doctor who did it was really considerate, and she said she left with this amazing smell on the top in her nose, and it was there for quite some time. And she's like, I don't know what it is.
Maybe you just used someone else's.
No, it was like because they were trying to make it a bit more pleasant.
Rose-scented, herbaceous border.
She didn't know.
I meant original lemon and mint.
It's 250 dirhams for the standard one, but if you want the Jo Malone version... That's going to come with a ribbon on it, and it's going to cost you £350.
It's not what I meant.
Might affect the test results.
Thank you very much, Serena.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm he had a cow, E-I-E-I-O. With a moo moo here and a moo moo there, here a moo there.
Talking farming this morning because, as we've been reporting, the Abu Dhabi Investment Office is pumping around 150 million dirhams into not one, not two, but three food tech firms. One of them is an old friend of the Business Breakfast, Sky Kurtz, and his organisation, Pure Harvest Smart Farms. They've been churning out tomatoes and strawberries and various other elements for a couple of years now at their farm. And we've been speaking to Sky this morning to find out what this deal means. So the first thing we asked him, how much cash are you getting and what are you going to use it for?
We've been speaking with the Abu Dhabi Investment Office, who is actively supporting this sector, among others, about investment and supporting some activities for us, which include we're investing in new technologies with our current deployments here in the UAE. We're also doing a lot of R&D activities for future deployments, but specifically around our climate management systems to make them more efficient and better serve the region. But also, we're deploying a first-of-its-kind algae reactor technology to produce and farm omega-3 fatty acids that we will use as additives in food, you know, for health benefits. So you're probably familiar with omega-3s. And then also we're able to hire and insource a lot of engineers and a lot of technical capabilities that we previously had to contract, but so that we can accelerate our development of our solution. So the exact amount of the investment is not disclosed, but the total investment in the three companies is 152 million dirhams. So it's a huge show of support from the Abu Dhabi government toward driving ag tech innovation here and making this really a center of innovation for the region.
So we've been speaking to Sky for 3 or 4 years now. He opened up his first farm in Al Ain back in 2017, and they have been making produce since then. We asked him, have you begun to turn a profit yet?
Well, in the current farm, no, not it's not profitable, but it's only because of the scale. It was a subscale proof of concept, right? So while we produce a tremendous amount of produce in the current farm, depending on the varieties, we produce around 450 to 600 metric tons a year in a pilot. But the new farms will take us to a wholly different scale. Like by Q2 next year, we'll be over 17 times our current size. And at that point, we will indeed be profitable. But our focus on this first build, really, right, this was a pilot. It was to prove the technology could work, that we would have a competitive cost structure, you know, in producing year round here. Also that the quality and the safety of the food would be on par or better than the European product, which has proven to be true. Brix is a measure of the sweetness of our fruit, and we are scoring some of the highest Brix measures in the world.
And Brix measure of sweetness made our ears prick up, and it reminded me that our producer, Shruti, her family owns a mango farm just outside of Mumbai. We've never been given any mangoes, have we?
No. But where are mangoes?
Well, she said June is mango season, so we said, could we turn the Brix measure of sweetness onto Shruti's fruity mangoes, and this is what he told us.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. It's an objective and quantifiable measure of quality, or one of them. And it's one that we carefully track us against competing product. And our product is indeed, you know, in many varieties, we score higher than anything we've ever seen in the world when we talk to seed suppliers and to other producers.
So back into the farm, back into agritech or agtech in Abu Dhabi. The Pure Harvest farm started with, as we mentioned, tomatoes and then also strawberries. It has diversified since then. And we asked him, just how far can this go, this ag tech of growing things in giant greenhouses in Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, wherever it may be? And what are the limits that you come up against?
Limits are really driven not by the system. We can produce just about anything. So we're able to maintain a perfect Mediterranean climate corridor year-round, including both in the summers when we must, of course, use advanced cooling systems, but also in the winters. Believe it or not, we have to heat. It gets too cold in the nights. And so in that climate corridor, you can grow just about anything: tomatoes, capsicum, cucumber, strawberry, aubergine, lettuce, microgreens, herbs, and in any variety, right? So we're producing 26 varieties of tomatoes now, just piloting different seeds, experimenting with the market and demand. But this is really just to show what's possible. I mean, there are over 400 commercial varieties of tomatoes alone. So it's not just about new crops. It's also about new varieties and offering better flavors and more unique product to the market. But how far can it go is really driven by economics. And there are certain things that it makes too much sense to ship. And for example, rice, right? Rice is a water-intensive crop. It can be ground, stored, and siloed and shipped in massive containers where the value-to-weight ratio of shipment is very, very low, right? Not a huge portion of the value is consumed in transportation cost. Whereas in fresh, that's a very different dynamic, right? Much of it has to be air freighted. And as a result, that's a huge cost per kilogram. You're shipping water around, right? You're flying water in airplanes. And it's also very unsustainable, has a huge carbon footprint. And really the costs and inefficiency of that supply chain end up in the price and in the quality that consumers consume. So where I'm, ultimately things that are water intensive and have, a sub 14-day shelf life will likely end up produced in a system like ours and should be. It's economic and it's sustainable. It's good for the economy and good for the consumer. Things like rice and grains and potatoes will probably not be in our systems. It would be too uneconomic. It can be done, but it probably shouldn't be.
Sky Kurtz, co-founder and CEO, Pure Harvest Smart Farms. He's one of the guys receiving the money. Brenda, you've been speaking to the guy with the checkbook.
Yeah, absolutely. His Excellency Dr. Tarek Benhendi is the Director General of the Abu Dhabi Investment Office. They are, as you say, the people who've written a check for 152 million dirhams to these three companies. We asked him, why are you doing this?
We are delivering on Abu Dhabi's long-term aspiration to build out some of the key sectors that we believe that technology has the ability to improve, ag tech being one of those. We've seen a lot of demand, particularly this year, given all of the situation that we've lived through in 2020. And what has happened is that we've been able to create and attract a lot of these companies to Abu Dhabi through the programs that we have, but more importantly, I think, through the initiatives and the ambition that we both share.
Three firms that you've chosen, and two of them, funnily enough, we've recently spoken to on the Business Breakfast, Sky Kurtz's Pure Harvest Smart Farms, Tomato People, and the meat and grocery delivery company Fresh to Home. Why these companies in particular?
We've been engaged with them for quite some time now. I mean, some of these relationships go back 6 to 9 months. We've been having lots of healthy discussions with them. I think what we do is we try to look at what the aspirations are of the company. We look at their business plans. We understand what it is that they're trying to accomplish. And if you look at how it is that they cover certain components of the AgTech supply chain, that is that seed to plate component that we look at, they address this quite nicely. They also work quite well with some of the previous firms that we've announced earlier this year. And so what we've seen is that not only are we building and supporting individual companies, but we're helping to make sure that the components of the ecosystem flow well together, and these two firms will be able to help with that.
So what does Abu Dhabi get out of this? I mean, the investment office is not a charity. You want a return. What do you want to see for your money?
So our return is driven by a return on economy and a return to innovation, the creation of knowledge, research and development, and really upskilling and providing jobs for the people that reside in Abu Dhabi. What it is that we're getting out of this is, one, we're driving that innovation narrative. Two, we're able to address some of the food security areas that we've identified over the last couple of years that are important for us to focus on. But three, I think, and more importantly, is that we're able to create these long-term collaborative relationships and help drive some of these partnerships over the long term, across geographies, and build on all of our relationships globally that we have.
How much more important has COVID made the food security issue here in the UAE?
I think it's no surprise to anyone that food and water are key areas of focus for the region. The UAE has taken the lead in terms of driving that narrative and that effort. I think if you look at what Abu Dhabi has done in particular, food security, especially once COVID hit us properly and we went into quarantine mode, was one of the key areas that we were looking at. And again, this is an initiative that was launched in 2019. So this is pre-COVID. It just, what materialized was that our thinking and our sort of thought process behind why this was important really was highlighted during COVID. So I think COVID only pushed the agenda forward some, but we were already focused on these sectors.
How far, though, can the UAE realistically go, given the geography, given the climate, given the sand and the soil beneath our feet? How food secure can we realistically become?
So our aim with this is not that we move from 90% food imports to 0% imports. Our aim with this is to make sure that we are driving the right behavior, the right approach, and that we're working with the best partners that we have identified that are going to be able to help us address some of these food security needs. Again, this is about how it is that we can test various technologies. We are not trying to pick a winner. We're trying to work with every single technology to make sure that we're allowing them to test their technology here and thrive. So realistically speaking, if we can bring this from 90% down to 70% or 60%, we will have been doing a tremendous effort, not only in the race to secure food, but also in driving that technology discussion.
Do you have a time frame for that? Do you have goals for that, Dr. Tarek?
We do. We've got a lot of ambitious goals. We don't have a goal that's linked to a percentage, but we have a goal that's linked to the number of companies, the types of technology, the people that we will be attracting through the program that we have. And really what it is we're trying to create an environment where you've got access and exposure. And eventually what will happen with that is that you create a system and an ecosystem that's very integrated through the thinkers and the doers. And this is where it is that we're hoping to come out.
And which actually brings me back to a point you made a couple of questions ago about jobs. How big can this sector be in terms of employment for us here in the UAE? What do you want to see?
It's a great question. What we've seen is that there are a lot of companies that are already on the ground here that are looking at adopting technology, right? So there's this narrative that when you adopt technology, it reduces the number of jobs. What we're seeing, though, is actually the advice that they are looking for and the support that they're looking for is creating jobs. So that's one component. The other component is new companies that are coming here, and the way that they're linking in with universities and creating new jobs is actually quite positive in terms of what we're seeing. So we think it's got a positive effect on the job market, and the trickle effect into other industries will be immense.
So what's next, Dr. Tarek? This is your focus on ag tech, and it's not your first focus on ag tech. These aren't the first companies that you've invested in this area. Where else is the Abu Dhabi Investment Office looking in terms of its firepower?
So our mandate is really to drive innovation and technology through most of the sectors in Abu Dhabi. We like to work with technologists, but really we like to work with big thinkers. We want to understand what it is that they're trying to accomplish, how it is that we can support, and more importantly, how it is we can use the infrastructure that Abu Dhabi has already built to help drive that growth and drive that success. So for us, we're looking at everything from ag tech to health tech, biotech, anything to do with taking existing corporates and helping them pivot towards adopting technology. So it's quite diverse in terms of what we're doing, but really going back to that narrative about let's create the right types of jobs, let's focus on innovation, and let's make sure that we're creating an ecosystem that's quite vibrant and works across the spectrum of opportunities.
30 seconds left with you, Dr. Tarek. Again, has COVID changed your priorities where you're investing?
COVID has only reinforced what it is that we knew, and that is that we've got to focus on driving innovation and technology. We've got to focus on creating the right opportunities for people. And our most important asset is human capital. Yes, we've got oil in the ground, but it's what's walking on the ground that's much more important to us, and how it is that we can secure that, make it more robust, and actually help people thrive is one of our key goals.
Delight to speak to you this morning. Dr. Tarek Bin Hendy, the Director General, thank you very much for your time from the Abu Dhabi Investment Office. I'm going to take that quote about what's walking on the ground being more important than the oil beneath it. You're going to hear that rolled out again.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Having a bit of a flick through the papers this morning, joined by producer Shruti. Let's start with a bit of a dance.
So they say, dance for me, dance for me, dance for me, oh, oh. I never seen anybody do the things you do.
TikTok back in the headlines, Shruts.
It is. So now TikTok says they haven't heard from the Trump administration in weeks. And as we know, the deadline, you know, when President Trump advised that they sell their shares to an American company, the deadline is tomorrow. So now they've gone to court to find out whether this still stands because they don't know what's happening. They haven't heard from the Trump administration in weeks.
My sympathy was with TikTok on this one. They've basically been ghosted by the Trump administration. Yes. And I tell you, we've all been there. We've all been there. You're having conversations for weeks. You're having a bit of a back and forth. There are messages exchanged at nighttime. What does this mean for you? I'd like things to change. Okay, are we in a relationship? Are we not in a relationship? No, I'd like you to sell your US, Australian and New Zealand arm to somebody else. I'm not ready for a commitment at the moment. I'm not quite available. Fair enough. You do all the things that you need to do and then they just disappear.
Fade into the dying of the light. I mean, they've been busy at the moment, but you're right, Shruts. You know, Reuters is reporting this, the headline on CNBC this morning. Within the past hour, TikTok hasn't heard from the Trump administration in weeks.
First 24 hours, you think that's all right? They're busy. They've got stuff on. They've had a big week.
Yes. You think it's like not top of their priority anymore.
48 hours, you think, well, you're clearly not even thinking of me. And on it goes.
Oh. And so CNBC and Reuters and many others have reached out to not only the US Treasury, but also Oracle.
This is when you phone their friends, aren't you, and say, is he still interested?
Larry! Larry!
They're going through Instagram. They can see that he's out with other people. He's still online.
I'm just imagining conversations, you know, like when President-elect Biden does actually come to the White House and, you know, they say, okay, what's top of the agenda? Coronavirus? Yes. TikTok? Huh? Like, who even thought about that?
No. Well, there you go. But yes, all of us, at one point, not too long ago, TikTok was the biggest national security threat the US faced.
Now it's the mail-in ballots.
Oh, yeah.
Staying with technology, last night was the third Apple launch event of the year. Normally they just do one big one in September, but of course this is not a normal time. So we had iPads and watches in September. The biggie was last month in October, the iPhones, biggest part of what Apple does. Last night it was the turn of the computers. Here's Apple boss Tim Cook.
In June, we announced that the Mac is taking another huge leap forward by transitioning to Apple Silicon. And we promised that the first Mac with Apple Silicon would arrive by the end of this year. Well, that day is here.
We are incredibly excited to announce our first step in this transition with our first chip designed specifically for the Mac. And we call it M1.
Woo! We got a new processor. Look, it's not the sexiest launch that Apple's ever done. No one's pulling anything out of a manila envelope or saying, today we reinvent the phone. But it is significant in that after 15 years of having Intel chips, and we're all Mac users, aren't we?
Yeah.
Mac laptop users, the new ones that are out next week that you'll be able to buy in the Apple store here and elsewhere will have their own processors in it. So Apple's bringing it in-house. And so it is significant to an extent for the tech industry because Apple wants to do as much as it possibly can in-house. The processor or the chip in any device is, of course, the heartbeat of that device. Now, to say Apple's making their own is slightly disingenuous. So if you look at what Intel does, Intel, you know, they do everything. They design the chips and they have their own factories and they build them themselves and then they sell them to Apple, Lenovo, whoever it may be. And Apple is slightly different. It's kind of, there are three people in this relationship. So there's Apple, who kind of does a bit of the high-level design work on it. And then there's ARM, the British chip maker, which does some more design work, but ARM doesn't have factories. Intel has factories. ARM doesn't have factories. It's a $40 billion company, big organization, doesn't have factories. And then you've got third-party factories in places like Taiwan that actually build the stuff. But the key difference is something called nanometers. Nanometers, something like that. The point is, and again, it's way above my pay grade, but the current Intel chips are 10 nanometers long. That's as small as they can get. The Apple stroke ARM ones are just 5 nanometers long, which means you can fit far more of them into the space. And that's the battleground for these things. If you can get more of them into a small space, you can make a very powerful laptop. It'll have longer battery life, and the Apple stroke ARM stroke XYZ third-party manufacturer are ahead in that. They were unveiled last night. No one's tested them, so we don't know. They look the same. They're going to cost about the same. How big a deal is it? It's not a game changer for Apple necessarily, but it is interesting that the world's biggest company, or certainly technology company, biggest company, depending on which day of the week you are, is bringing more stuff in-house. The question is, though, I was reading some reviews because I'm in the market for a new laptop. This is more a consumer tech question. Would you buy the first generation or iteration of anything? Because what one comparison I read last week, and I think I'm probably going to buy one, was it could be a quantum leap in technology and they could be, you know, a next generation better than the current MacTops, or it could be 1985 New Coke. Remember when
yes.
I barely remember when Coke introduced New Coke in 1985. I was only 13, but it was, we've got New Coke. It's a completely new formula. It's much better. It tastes a lot like Pepsi, and everyone hated it. And it was an abject disaster. And within 3 months, they were back to literally 3 months. They were back to old Coke. And there are people saying this is kind of a New Coke moment for Apple. And it could go either way.
Well, it's going to depend, isn't it, as to whether it works. I mean, I wouldn't... Here's the thing, though. New Coke, it either tastes the same or it doesn't. And if you didn't think it was broken in the first place, you're going to be like, no. With something like your processor, though, all you actually care about is that it goes.
Mm.
It works. That it does the job. Do you know what I mean? It's not like when they replaced the keyboard and they brought in the butterfly keyboards and everyone was like, ugh, because it was something that you actually touched and you interacted with. I would argue that the processor not so much.
But it depends on this, like, it depends on the speed of your computer, right? Like,
yeah. Will it be good? Will it be fast?
Yeah, exactly.
If so, you don't have an emotional reaction to what's running your computer.
I mean, it leads to the performance. For example, I've got a MacBook Air that's about 3 or 4 years old, right? I charge it in the morning. I open it when I get to work. It's normally run out by the time the show is finished, or we leave the show 4 hours later.
Old.
Yeah, it's old. I didn't buy a particularly fast processor. The memory's not. It just doesn't. It can't really cope with 2020, let alone 2021.
None of us can, Richard.
Well, exactly. Empathy there. They say the new MacBook Air will last about 15 hours. The MacBook Pro, which costs about the same, will last about 17 to 20 hours of internet browsing because the processors are smaller, therefore more efficient, therefore they generate less heat. So we'll see. What are the big changes? The only difference really between the Air, you're an Air person.
I am
Brady?
An Air person.
Pro.
Truths, you're a pro. Okay. Mm. The difference this time will be the Air isn't going to have a cooler.
Oh.
Irony, the Air's not going to have any air, whereas the Pro will.
Mm.
And some of the initial, they're not reviews because no one's seen them yet, but some of the initial responses are, look, the processor speed and how efficient it is and battery life are partly due to heat. And if the Pro's going to have a cooler and the Air isn't, are you going to have to stick your MacBook Air in the fridge every 20 minutes?
Yeah, but Air is designed in a way that it's not used for like heavy use. It's more for, you know, fun. And Pro is more the one that you use for work.
Exactly. So you're saying that we just have our laptops for fun and you're the one who does all the work?
Yes.
I concur. Very few people in this organisation would disagree. We all know it's actually producer Isa who does all the work, but you're a close second, Shreets.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Big focus on aviation. We spoke to the regional boss of IATA, Kashif Khalid, about the vaccine. So much talk in the industry about that. Two different angles. We'll get to the distribution and the role that the UAE can play in a second. But first of all, the vaccine and what it might mean for passenger travel. IATA, since March, has been calling for digital health passports. So we've got an app for that. It'll tell you if you've had your vaccine or your test. I asked Kashif what kind of progress we're making on that.
Absolutely. From an industry perspective, we firmly believe that having health passports or testing measures in place currently is the safe and most efficient way to open up air transport without any hurdles for the traveling masses. Whether it's currently managing the passenger health data or looking at harmonizing global testing practices, or in the future when a vaccine is rolled out and endorsed, there has to be a common platform where government, states, border control agencies, and the aviation industry recognize that health passport and enable the facilitation of passengers across borders.
Yeah, the health passport's been the thing that IATA and the WTTC have been pushing, and now, of course, Pfizer's vaccine news. We also spoke to the aviation expert and lawyer Nick Humphrey, partner at Kennedy's, to say, is the Pfizer announcement, is a potential vaccine the silver bullet that the aviation industry has been looking for?
Not quite. The Pfizer vaccine is unique. There's optimism, and obviously those investing in airline equities have reflected that in the past few days. But this vaccine is unique, unlike others being developed, in what the supply chain will be actually able to do to support its distribution. Because this particular vaccine requires ultra-cold storage, which is at a temperature of about minus 70 degrees Celsius. So if everyone would have seen imagery, for example, of a lot of passenger aircraft that have been configured for cargo transportation to get a lot of the, let's say, medical COVID support equipment flown around the world, well, that won't work. And this will only really be able to be carried by airlines that have got the specialized equipment. And not just that, then at the end point, you need to have these specialized refrigeration units. So it's optimistic, but it's not the silver bullet.
Also asked him about the timeline for airlines to benefit from this. This is what Nick told us.
Look, it's interesting because I think the airlines are, particularly the big carriers, are taking steps already with a view that the global supply chain will be strained. For example, Emirates only recently, I think it was last week, announced the development of their Sky Cargo vaccine hub at Dubai South. So they see an opportunity, and the air cargo carriers really see an opportunity, the likes of, and those specialised in cargo, for example, like DHL and FedEx. So there is, the rates for cargo will go through the roof. What will be an interesting flex point of this is when other vaccines roll out, which aren't required to be transported at such low temperatures, will these vaccines be transported in priority of other cargo? Will this push up other prices that, for example, shoppers in the UAE rely on certain foods that are transported by air? Will we see a consequence of that? So there will be, as this strain occurs, there will be other consequences across the economy.
Inmarsat have released their latest figures and findings just on all things aviation. Ain't good at the moment. Basically, top line from their findings suggest that 8 in 10 airline passengers, 80% across the globe, do not expect to return to their previous travel routines post-COVID-19, according to the 10,000 frequent flyers who were polled. Said that they basically don't intend to resume their travel regime even after the virus is under control. 31% planning to travel less frequently by air. So I think just on that that sentiment of it's going to take a long while for people to regain the trust to get back up there in the air.
I don't. That doesn't chime with me.
No, not with. I don't. I think we would be an anomaly here in the UAE. I think just the very nature of us being a bit of a hub is different. But for those that can go to on holiday to Blackpool, why would you go anywhere else?
If we had Blackpool on our doorstep, yeah. We'd never buy a ticket again in our lives, would we?
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.